welcome in. This is All Ball, all basketball, all the time. And, man, there's been such an incredible response to part one of my talk with Dan Munson. We thought we'd drop part two for you very shortly after. So, look, there's a lot of things that we can get into. I've gotten a chance to see a bunch of these top-rated college basketball teams, and I am fascinated with what the NCAA tournament is going to look like. I do think that probably the most underrated part about the one-site tournament and condensing some of these games is going to be conditioning. It's going to be conditioning. I don't know how you pick. There's been so many bizarre results, and sometimes you have teams that they don't have half their guys. Like, it's hard to tell who's any good. When you're like, man, what happened there? Like, well, they didn't have half their team. The selection of these teams is going to be fascinating, but so too will be the conditioning, considering you're going to have time off, an extensive amount of time off, if they have these conference tournaments. Big Ten may move to Indianapolis from Chicago instead. So you'll have guys that'll be stuck in Indy for 3-4 weeks, kind of their own bubble. Going to be interesting. But we got other podcasts to get to on that one. What I want to get you for your weekend is the completion of my talk with Dan Munson. Dan's the head coach at Long Beach State. You wouldn't believe where Long Beach State was practicing for 5 or 6 weeks. Here's a tip: outdoors. Right? Like, outdoors. There's a lot there. There's also some amazing stories about Mark Few and Marcy Few and Billy Greer and all that Gonzaga Mafia upcoming that I want to share. So let's get to it. Here's the second part of my interview with Dan Munson, head coach of Long Beach State. And we go back to when he was at Gonzaga. They made a run in his second year to the Elite Eight. Dan, you lost to UConn. They go on to win a national championship. What happened next?
So you lose to UConn, right? And they go on to win a national championship. What happened next?
Well, reality set in. I think for 2 or 3 weeks, I really meant we were in a bubble. I mean, we didn't really realize, and I think maybe because it was new in my career that I just thought this was where it was supposed to be and how it worked. We didn't change anything. I mean, I remember before we went on the first weekend to Seattle, we were the kids, Mike Nielsen was a barber for the team. And I remember I was leaving practice one day, the day before we left to go to Seattle to play Minnesota and then ultimately Stanford, and there Mike's cutting people's hair. And I said, hey, you guys better clean this up before we get back, or I'm gonna close this locker room. You know, we're not, you know, this is no barber shop. So I remember getting back on that Sunday in between games and the hair was still in the locker room. So I changed the code on the lock. So they're getting ready, you know, like I would have, you know, in the regular season, they're getting ready out in the stands, and there's a few media people and everything, but it just seems like we're really, really grounded doing what we do, enforcing every rule, not really. You know, I look back, I hope the kids enjoyed it as much as, you know, I think they did, but you know, we just kept everything the same. But after we lost that game at Connecticut is when I really realized the magnitude, because when we came back in between those, like I said, there was a reporter here or a reporter there, but it really hadn't caught on to Spokane like it did after the second weekend of being in the NCAA tournament and where it's at now, the Zagmania, as you've been in Spokane, how much that that basketball team has captivated and kind of owns that town. I didn't, you know, it was an early morning game. The Connecticut game was the first game of the day, and it was on the West Coast. It was in Phoenix. So we were back on an unseasonably 75-degree day. We were back at like 2 or 3 in the afternoon because you had the private plane getting you back and everything. And I never forget coming off the bus at the airport, and I'm like, you know, nothing's changed. You know, I mean, God, we were so close, and we didn't get it done. And we get to campus, and they had arranged a rally at campus, and you couldn't walk on campus. I mean, it's a small campus, but there had to be 5,000 people, and the bus had trouble getting through the wave of people to get to the Martin Center. It was that many people. And I remember thinking, these people they watched the game, right? We lost. I don't think we had any clue what an impact we'd had on history or the program or the university or anything until that moment. And we got back because the plane was a little bit late and we were really sad. And we had a comedian named Big Ed. I don't know if you've heard of Big Ed, but he's famous. He's an actor now in Hollywood and everything. And Big Ed was our play-by-play guy. And I remember everybody was just so down on the plane and they had like a 30-minute delay. I said, Ed, get up and give them something. Give them, get a smile on their face. And he got up and did a little, impressions of Fitz or me or whatever he did, to kind of lighten the mood and everything. Cause we really felt like we had an opportunity. We didn't succeed. And Gonzaga until 2017 had been scratching and clawing to get all the way back there. We didn't realize how really close we were, or what an impact it really had on everybody.
Okay. So how'd the Minnesota thing come to be?
Well, I had, obviously, I had a lot of opportunities right then, and some of them, I just wasn't mentally ready to, some of them just weren't good fits. Some of them, but the one that really I thought fit me was Notre Dame. And that was the one that I did, I just felt like that was Gonzaga at the next level. That came down, my dad's like, hey, I said, I don't, none of these really interest me, but Notre Dame would. My dad said, well, you should call them. So back then you had the NCAA guide of people's numbers. So I just had a generic number to the AD's number at Notre Dame. And I just left a message there. And I said, hey, my name's Dan Munson. I coached at Gonzaga, Notre Dame, be a dream job for me. I was, born and raised a fan, that kind of thing, Catholic. And it really felt like it fit me. I don't know if you guys had any interest, but I just thought I'd leave a message just in case. And Swarthoff, the AD, called right back and said, we had no clue. We would love to talk to you. Because this, the Final Four then was, this is on probably Monday after the game was Saturday. And the Final Four would start the next week because we were in the Elite Eight. And so I went there and they interviewed, ended up being myself, Skip Prosser, Matt Doherty, and Mike Bray. And so I did an interview at the Tampa Bay Devil Ray Stadium because that guy, I guess, the owner is a Notre Dame guy, and that's where they did him. So by the time I got back from my interview, they had called my room, and my dad was standing there. He said, how do you think it went? I said, I have no idea, Dad. I'm just exhausted. I'm happy at Gonzaga. I'm glad I got the experience. It's what an honor that they would even want to talk to me. I mean, I wasn't even on their list 4 days ago. And he said, well, you must have done okay because they called here and they want to meet with you again tomorrow. I said, oh, okay. So I go back for a second one and come back. And that was the day of the game. It was Saturday. And so we weren't able to go to the game. He said, well, hey, let's just go down and have a beer. I'm really proud of you. This has been awesome. So we go down and you know how it is a Final Four. Once the game starts, everybody's gone to the game. There's nobody there at the headquarter hotel. So it was myself, Mike Bray, and Skip Prosser in the bar. And we struck up a conversation and we start talking and one thing leads to another. And we all kind of fess up that we had just got done with an interview at Notre Dame. And they said, they told all of us there's four of us left. And we go,
oh, one missing.
My dad, it's only my dad could do. Just the truth serum guy goes, well, here I am buying beers for all the losers. And a few hours later, they named Matt Doherty the head coach at Notre Dame. But so anyway, at that point, I'm like, okay, I'm going back to Gonzaga. I got all my players back. And my dad was like, hey, you need to enjoy this. You need some time to, really let it soak in and everything. So one thing that did do is it got me involved with USA Basketball, invited me. And I'm like, this is an opportunity of a lifetime. I was going to get married August 7th, and that was going to be in July. And I'm like, get away. I absolutely make the heart grow fonder. Maybe she'll like me when I get back, because all this wedding stuff stressing us both out. So, and actually she even took her mom over there for a couple days. So it was a great, before marriage, opportunity. Palma del Marco, Spain, It's like a resort area in Spain. It was really a great, you know, we had, you know, Oliver Purnell was the head coach. We had a great team. We won the gold medal. And I, when we left there, we had training camp in Dayton because he was the head coach at Dayton. And the Minnesota job, that whole scandal, it looked like they weren't going to do anything about it. But in June or July, it kind of bubbled back up, and they ended up dismissing Clem Haskins. And they were talking, you know, Rick Majerus, Mike Montgomery. They had a whole slew of guys. And then we went to Spain, and this was at the beginning of July, and we're gone a month. So we come back, and back then you have those old fashioned tape recorders in 99 where message machines, and it would say Tuesday, 3 p.m. and it'd give you the message. Friday, 6 p.m. and it'd give you the message. So I had about three messages from the AD at Minnesota, and I'm like, well, these things got to be a month old, you know. I mean, they've got, because you have no internet, and we're in Spain, we have no idea. But I said, that job filled weeks ago. But I said, hey, it's probably, you know, just a class thing to do and to thank them and let them know. So I called the number back, and Mark Deanhart, the AD, I said, how are you doing, Mr. Deanhart? And he said, I'm doing good now that I found you. And I said, excuse me. And he says, yeah, what, you know, what do you think about, you know, I'd really like to talk to you about this opportunity we have here. I said, this job's not filled. He goes, no, sir. But it's going to be, what are you doing? Can I come see you tomorrow? I said, no, I'm recruiting in Seattle tomorrow. He said, well, I'll send a plane there and you can come to Minneapolis on Sunday. And one of those deals. And I didn't realize back then, I was so naive, that private planes mean that they privately own them and you don't get to buy a ticket on or off. So once they got me there, I mean, I turned the job down three times and I'm like, okay, I'm ready to go home. They're like, no, we're going to meet again. And, you know, it was one of those things that I was going to get married. I was going to start a family. And I'm like, okay, they're offering me as much money here in 2 years that I could make in 15 years at Gonzaga. And Gonzaga had been so generous. And I mean, they broke the bank, you know, to make me the highest paid coach in the WCC. And I went from like $60,000 to $100,000. And then after the last game of the year, they bumped it to 125 with some boosters. I'm like, okay, there's no way this poor Catholic school can do any more than this. I mean, I can't. So anyway, eventually, you know, the odd thing that happened was I last time I turned it down, I said, I don't care how much money it is. I can't be this far away from my family. I want, you know, be around my family. And my wife is from Spokane. So the last time they come back with a friends and family budget, to where it wasn't a lot of money, 10-15,000, you know, but you start doing, okay, now they want me that bad that they're going to fly out my mom and dad, or they're going to fly out my sister or whatever to come to a game. You know, that's pretty cool that I could be able to do that for my family. So that was the tipping point that ended up taking it. And that was July 28th, you know, and I got married on August 7th. So it was a whirlwind. That next year, they say, you know, big things you can do in your life. There's like seven of traumatic things. And that year I did five of them. I changed jobs. I got married, had a baby, built a house. There's one more I did that to make it five.
Did you jump out of a plane? Did you jump out of a plane?
No. I can't remember what the fifth one was.
Yeah,
but
let's go. Got married.
Yep.
Changed jobs.
Yep.
Built a house. Had a baby.
Got married.
I got that one.
Oh, yeah. Did you? Okay.
Yeah. Changed jobs. Got married. Had a baby. And built a house. Right.
Yeah. And one of them was getting fired, and I didn't know if I was going to make it through that year, but that wasn't the fifth one.
So I remember because we took a transfer, Antoine Broxy, who's part of the previous crew at Minnesota, and we were relentless with him.
Move.
Anytime he was like,
we moved. Oh. We moved. That's it.
Move. There you go. There you go. You moved. Moved. There yeah. you go. That's five.
Sorry.
So their whole thing was like there's a woman and she was doing all their classwork and there was other and they were getting paid. I mean, it was a whole gamut, right?
Yeah.
So you're on massive probation. It's also as much as, and I love the barn, but you don't have practice. Like, it's not like it's a good job anyway, traditionally, right? Because you do have great in-state players, a couple of great, like you had Joe Persbilla, for example, but none of those kids really want to go to the University of Minnesota. So it's like there's a limited number of kids in the state. They're pretty good, but Khalid El-Amin went to UConn, et cetera, et cetera. And then you're not first or even top five in facilities in the Big Ten. And the Big Ten is the real deal. And you're on probation. And you come from little Gonzaga that you guys had built from cute little furry Gonzaga to, you got this great team and everybody back. What is that experience like?
Well, you know, the decision, one thing about it is that you looked at Gonzaga, and what Mark has done that I think is, I know it's talked about a lot, and so I analyze and everything, so it's not like it's not out there, but to sustain at a place like Gonzaga is what's remarkable. Not having the run that we had. I mean, you can look at the George Masons and the VCUs of the world and the Butlers of the world. You know, there's been mid-majors that had great runs. And even in the West Coast Conference, you know, I'm looking at that. Do I go to the Big Ten or not? Where they had gone to the NCAA or postseason 13 out of 15 years, they're averaging 13,000 people to every game. You know, there was some tradition there. In hindsight, as Bobby Knight said when I met him, he said, everybody's cheated that's been here. What are you going to do? And I'm like, whoa, you know. But even if you look at the WCC, okay, as you said, Hank and Bo Kimball had made a run at Loyola. Doug Christie won a million games in a row at Pepperdine. And like 3 or 4 years, they went undefeated in the league and made runs in the NCAA tournament. Santa Clara and Steve Nash beat Arizona and had a run in the NCAA tournament. So people in the West Coast Conference and people nationally had done this, but nobody at these places had sustained it. And I don't regret going to Minnesota in the fact that I feel like, A, I started something good there, and B, I helped sustain it in the fact that when I left there, they made a commitment that if we're going to keep it going, we don't want to be one of those schools. We're going to put resources in here. We're going to build a new arena. We're going to get private planes. We're going to get training table for these players. We're going to increase the salaries of our coaches. They did everything to do that other places thought that they could keep going. Because, you know, the enrollment, I think, doubled the year 99 after, you know, we had that run. And they saw, you know, I mean, there was a point early in that when we're talking the chronology of Gonzaga, butchered the word, but they were talking about shutting the doors at one time. You know, the school had big financial problems, and for their foresight to see those things, I think, you know, it took me to leave for them to make that happen. And, you know, and in my life, it ended up being a great thing, not professionally, but I went there and it was a brutal situation. As you said, I mean, they gave me a good contract because they gave me 5 years after probation, which ended up being like a 10-year contract. But, you know, professionally it was brutal. I mean, I was not prepared for the media scrutiny. I didn't realize, you know, how much the NCAA could cripple you with scholarship reductions and sanctions and those kind of things. But personally, I wouldn't trade it. I don't know that I'd still be married if Darcy and I, you know, both born and raised in Spokane, all had our own cronies, our own friends. You know, we had to rely on each other through tough times. You know, we have all four children born there, and really, you know, I became a better father, I think, a more grounded and a better coach because I had to go through all this adversity. So there was a lot of positives in my life there through negativity, I guess, you know, learning the Coach Fitzgerald way, you know, the old school way. But it was tough. I mean, I've had a lot of mornings with 4 a.m., 5 a.m. rolling over, seeing the snow, and I do not want to go out in that world today because I knew, you know, all the roadblocks in front of me that day. But you get through it, and it was 7 years and 7 games. And Doug Gottlieb probably doesn't remember this, but he did my last game there. It was a yeah, and I remember you calling me that next day concerned. Did I say anything wrong or did anything? I really appreciated that call that, you know, it was, I said, you had nothing. This was coming down the pike way before the Pac. It was a Big Ten ACC challenge against Clemson.
Here's what I remember. I think it was McGuire. You were redshirting him that year is what you said,
yep,
right? You said,
yep, exactly.
I think this is my last year.
Yeah.
I think they're going to let me go. And so he's not in school. He's just hanging out with me every day.
That's a great memory by you.
I thought that is the coolest freaking thing I've ever heard. And so I have a son, he's 11 and he's little and he says he wants to be a basketball player. I don't know if he'll be good enough or whatever. And I told him, I said, hey, if we hold you back, I'm going to do what Dan Munson did. He's like, what's that? I go, you're just going to hang with me for a year. Because like, I'll never get that year back. And there's one other guy who I know has done that. He is Darius Rucker's son. I think this is the last year. And I don't know what happened. I got to catch up with Darius about it. But I was with him after he performed at the Final Four. But I think it was a different concert I was with him. He's a friend of mine. And his son's into golf. Mm. And Darius loves golf. And his son wants to play college golf, whatever. So he was going to his last year before high school, I think, or maybe he's going to stay back. Like Darius is going to Europe to tour. And he's like, taking him out of school. He's going to hang with me. Right. Cause you never, but I distinctly remember that. I was like, that is an amazing thing. If I ever have a son, I want to do that. And that's a great memory.
Yeah. And we talked, McGuire and I talk about that. Like I said, he's into coaching now. He's with Leon at Boise State. And the other thing that because he was five, and they say your memory for your lifetime, you can remember things when you're 5 years old. You have to be at least five to have, you know, childhood memories. And he still does. He'll still mention, you know, we'll be watching Ohio State. I said, do you remember going there? He goes, oh yeah, Dad, that's the one with the really good coach's room. They have the TV in there and everything, you know? And it was a great, I'd have no regrets of that. I think, you know, my wife might have a few academically for him because he wasn't challenged, you know, early in his academic stuff, but he doesn't. I mean, it was a great bonding for he and I, and for him to be such a not sounding board, but a reality check. You know, it's like, okay, I'm probably going to lose this job, but look at what I got here, you know, and put him in his pajamas and put him on the plane and you know what, and lay with him, you know, when you couldn't sleep at night and you have him, you know, in that king size bed in the hotel room. It did. And it's so great that you would remember that, but it's a story I don't tell very often.
How have you emotionally handled the Gonzaga thing? Right? Because outwardly, and it's not like you have any negativity, but like, you know, I'm sure there's a time in which you go, that could have been me. Like this, have you always watched their games, their highlights? Have you gone through the different, was it the five stages, right?
Five stages of grief or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Like how have you dealt with
a mourning? Yeah. You know, I think I've dealt with it pretty good because they've made it good for me, you know. I mean, they've made me feel a part of it. Mark and I are such close friends, has made it good, you know. But I'll never forget in 2017 when they went to and to answer your question, I watch every game. I watch every highlight. Now I kind of spoil them. Like, okay, they're up 25. I might turn it off now, but for years, you know, and again,
in those first couple of years, did you, or in those first couple of weeks? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Cause I
did really you feel good it. When they, did you feel good when they won?
I did, but I'd miss it. You know, I'd miss those guys. I mean, it's such, the culture there is so unique, and the most amazing thing to me is in 21 years, it hasn't changed. And I didn't really realize that until 2017 when I was able to go with them at the Final Four. And the interesting thing on that was, you know, Mark calls me after they win to go to the tournament or to go to the Final Four that next Sunday morning. He said, you know, you're going to be there, right? I'm like, Hey, Coach, when's the last time I haven't gone to Final Four? I go to the Final Four every year. It's just a bonus now. This year, you got your team there. He said, no. I mean, you're going to go with us. And I said, well, what are you talking about? He said, well, here's the number to our hotel people. Here's our number to our ticket people. I said, I got a hotel, Coach. Do you just worry about coaching the game? He goes, no, you don't. You're not getting what I'm saying. He said, you need to be with us. He said, you're going to need an extra hotel because your family needs to be there. I said, I appreciate that, Mark, but my family wasn't even born when my kids weren't even born when I was at Gonzaga. And he said, no, but they're born into this family. And I get emotional even talking about this, but he really made it me feel like, you know, a part of it. And when I got there, I'm like, okay, that was nice of him. Now he's got a Final Four to go. And I spent as much time with him, you know, that week as we were on vacation. I mean, he's like, come on, we got films. Come on, let's go to practice, you know, and just made us feel included. And you could tell this brick by brick thing that he said, you know, hey, you know, this has been in the works for 20 years. You know, he really meant it. He had a bus for my family and his family and the other assistant coaches' families, you know. So, you know, we had our own bus. We had a party for former players, you know, only a film session, you know. One time he invited all the players and of course, us coaches for film session. And I think he told us it was at 7, and at 6:45 he had the team there. And when we walked in, the team gave us a standing ovation. And that culture of just thankful for the people before.
Appreciation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Appreciation. It's all you can ever ask for is appreciation. Exactly. And he goes, I'm going to give you two Fuey stories. And I have one that I've never told anyone, literally anyone.
Until now.
Okay. Until this very moment.
Yeah.
In my first year of calling games for ESPN full time was 2002, 2003. And 2003, 2004, they had a great team. And I flew out and my wife had told me that she was pregnant like 3 weeks before or something. It would have been our first. And she had an ultrasound when I had to fly, you know, and at the time they moved me to Connecticut. My second year, they moved me to Connecticut. And I had to fly like, you know, from Hartford to Chicago. It might've been a double stop, right? Spokane is not an easy place to get to. I landed and all I heard, I could barely hear audible in her message that the ultrasound, there was nothing inside. It was an empty sac. She had a miscarriage. She was going to have a miscarriage. And so I didn't know what to do. Like, I called her back and like, you know, cause by the time I would turn around and fly back, if I missed the game, she probably would have already had the procedure, right? So it's like, okay, what do I do? And so I called my boss, a guy named Dan Steer, and I said, he's like, do whatever you want. And so I was literally at like a Gonzaga practice, and Fuey comes over and he's like, something wrong. And I said, yeah, and I kind of told the story, and he's like, is there anything I can do? And I said, I don't know what to do. He's like, well, look, this is way more important than basketball. I'm like, want to fly home? Fly home. Like, I'll get, if I, you need, and I'd like to get somebody to fill in for you. It's like ESPN2 late night game, you know? So I go to the hotel, and I wasn't staying at the Davenport, by the way, which was like, pissed me off. When you go to Spokane, you got to stay at the Davenport. And that time they put me like some Marriott or something. And there's a blinking red light, a message, and it's Marcy. And I'd never met Marcy before, ever. And she just said, hi, it's Marcy Few. Could you call me? So I call her and she says, listen, Mark, call me. And if there's anything we can do at all, she's like, why don't you come up for dinner? I'm alone. I don't know what to do. I went to their house for dinner and it just couldn't be more kind. Just the kinship of, and Mark and I were not friends at the time, but they just were honest. Could not be better human beings to somebody who kind of like in the middle of nowhere, lost. I don't know anybody, you know? And she was, so that's one. And I didn't fly back. I did the game and I, you know, and because the logic in my head was like, it doesn't actually make sense. It's not going to make it any better. So fast forward to a couple years later, and they had a very good team, and they played Texas Tech in the NCAA tournament, and they had the game won, and they gagged it away. And it was, I think it was in Tucson. And the year before, they had had that terrible seed against Wyoming, right? They're like six in the country and got a six seed. So the next year, they get a good seed, they play Texas Tech, and they get beat. And so I wanted to wait. And so I waited 24 hours, and I call Mark, and I can barely hear him. And I said, "Hey, man, you okay?" He's like, "What?" I said, "Are you okay?" "Yes, yes." He's like, "Yeah, I'm fine. I'm fly fishing. You want to call me later?" I was like, I'm calling to see if you're okay. Like, it was a really, you had the game. Yeah, it's just a basketball game. I'm fly fishing with my kids. Like, I'll get back to you. Like, that's it. So, and to this day, he's the same guy. Same guy. So it's really interesting on how level he's been able to stay. And I do think it makes his success and their success much more palatable for those of us who I haven't accomplished that success and you left what you had built behind.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, it's like when you get fired, you know, I'll always appreciate Tubby Smith because Tubby did nothing but compliment how the program was left, you know, and it's so easy for a guy to blame everything on that predecessor, you know, and he wasn't that kind of person. And it's not just Mark, and Mark is great, obviously. I mean, he makes me feel a part of it, and he's gives me all kinds of credit, all that kind of thing. And certainly, you know, you have the what if games, but I don't have it much just because I'm able to look at the rest of my life and go, look, I've got, you know, the experience at Minnesota, the experience there. I've got nothing to complain about or to be jealous of, you know, but it's not just Mark at Gonzaga. It's that whole family. I mean, when you go back there, I mean, if I go into the bagel shop there, you know, they'll thank me for starting this, you know, whatever it is. Mike Roth, Chris Staniford, the administration there, the priests, whoever it is, you know, it's you really are still part of that family. I mean, and which reminds me, I'd be remiss if I didn't, you know, talk about this, that team and everything, and talk about Jeremy Eaton, who, you know, was diagnosed here in the last couple of weeks with stage 4 rectal cancer, and how everybody's rallying around him, who was a part of that team. And, you know, I'm trying to rally some stuff from here to send him. And it's just really a sad thing, but it's the way that the, like he, I saw a thing, and I have not talked to him because I wanted to wait to see what I was going to do before. But I know Leon talked to him yesterday or the day before. And I talked to Mark yesterday, he was going to call him, but they just mentioned it on the telecast. Sean Farmer, I think, did on Saturday, and first I'd heard of it, but they got a GoFundMe fund. It's already raised 50 grand, you know, because he didn't have insurance. And so, you know, the family, it, you know, we all put our hands in a huddle, and we're trying to replicate that at Long Beach State right now. But it's people put their hands in a huddle and say, family at Gonzaga, it is, and you are part of that family. Like Mark said before the Final Four game, you know, I didn't know that until I went back there that I would really feel like, yeah, that, but I'm not part of this. It's been 20 years, but I did feel it, you know, and that makes it so much easier to root for and to be, you know, sit there in every game. My daughter's a freshman there. She's on the crew team, and she, you know, just loves it. And, you know, when I was talking to Mark yesterday, how's Molly doing? Is she, you know, doing good in the dorms? Is there anything she needs? You know, it's just really cool. That's all it's cool.
You mentioned so Long Beach, and you've been in Long Beach a long time, and you do this thing where to raise money for the entire athletic department, you guys just play a murderer's row every year, right?
We kind of scaled it back the last year or two in the car.
I know, but it was more or less like, holy cow, I hope he has a long contract because they're gonna get killed. Yo, what's that like? What's that like for you too? Because you've had 21 seasons, you've had some very good years, but how do you, I guess here's the question. And how do you keep the kids confident for when you get to the Big West, when they're taking those beatings in the guarantee games?
Well, at first they weren't beatings. At first, you know, the thing is that, you know, you're trying to replicate a Gonzaga, and a Gonzaga, we played anybody, anywhere. That's how we got it going there. You know, we had some more experienced older guy back then. Guys stayed in the program 5 years, you know, and when I first got here, guys were doing that too. But my first game as a head coach, my first Division I game was in top of the World Classic at Gonzaga when we played Clemson, Tulsa, who had just come from the Sweet 16 a year before. Right. Bill, you know, that was my first game, Division I head coach, first Division I game. And we're up 40-8 with 5 seconds left in the half. And they banked in a half court shot to get to 11, you know. And then we played, my second game was against Clemson, who was Mississippi State. And we won by 3, who was coming off a Final Four appearance that year. And then in the finals, Rick Barnes and Clemson was fifth in the country, and we won by 13. You know, and that's how, you know, my career started. And so you try to replicate that wherever you're at. And so here at Long Beach, you know, I was trying to replicate that. And when we had Casper Ware and Larry Anderson and TJ Robinson and some fellas, you know, we won the league 3 straight years. It wasn't murder's row. We went and won at Pittsburgh, who had at that time had won 50 in a row at home with Jamie Dixon, and we're in, you know, went in there and snapped that streak. You know, we beat UCLA, we beat USC. We've got wins against 2 against Xavier. We, you know, in the 13 years here, we've, you know, Stanford.
But like you can pick off one or two, but you play, yeah. Like the refs travel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And yeah. So you're going to win one and then you're going to lose a couple. And I just, how do you, and you're part of it is you're generally a very positive human being, right? But I
with those guys, with Casper and those guys, you know, they had that, they thought they belonged at USC. They thought they belonged at UCLA. So I said, you come here, and that's part of the recruiting, and we're going to give you a chance to prove it. We're going to go play those guys, you know? And for a while there, it worked for recruiting, and it worked for the profile of the, you know, we get more TV and more exposure and that kind of thing. But slowly, as transfers started happening in the last 4 or 5 years, it's kind of we've had to scale back because, like you said, it becomes a fine line of the balance of their confidence. You know, everybody says they want to fight Mike Tyson until he hits them. You know, and so we kind of got into that a little bit. Guys were saying they wanted to, but their body language on the court didn't really come there. So we've scaled it back a little bit. You know, but. I'd like to get to that. I mean, I've that's always my goal, is to get Long Beach State on the map as a power mid-major like Gonzaga is. You know, I think that's every mid-major's dream, is to be where Gonzaga is.
So you're in Los Angeles County, right? And so you guys were practicing outside for how long?
I think 5 weeks, 6 weeks. I mean, we didn't hit inside until October. Maybe it was almost November, October 20 something, maybe. And then we went on I've got certain kids that have been quarantined 4 or 5 different times because the school went on one, and then, you know, players here or there. I mean, we've probably practiced less than, you know, everybody, but maybe one or two out there, because a little known fact that I didn't know until this pandemic is that not LA County is obviously, you know, the pandemic has hit hard, and they're being very stringent, as they should be on their protocols. But a little known fact that I didn't know, there's 2 cities in LA County that have their own health board, and that's Pasadena and Long Beach. So we not only have to abide by the LA County protocols, but we also have our own board of Long Beach we have to go through. So it's been very rewarding to see how much my guys love ball, because that has been tested.
What's that like to practicing outside with a college team? Like you and I, we grew up like camp, you know, the big kids always got to be inside and the older kids were outside, but dudes do not. And I've held AAU stuff outside. Dudes do not like to be outside. They just do not. No matter how much we grew up playing pickup on the outside, I mean, every 24-hour fitness has a gym, and now you're outside. Like, what is that like for a college team to practice outside?
Yeah, it was so exciting the first day, because we hadn't done anything for, you know, so long or even been together. I mean, I still have guys on my team that have not been in my office. I still have guys that are on my team that have not been in our locker room. I mean, all that stuff is still shut down. We go to practice. They have a chair there, like 10 feet away from some anything else. They change their shoes there, and then practice is over. They have to leave. I mean, so but the tennis courts was, it sounded good and it was exciting and everything, but they wouldn't let you, had to have your own ball. So, you know, you teach guys, you know, you can't pass, you can't rebound, you know, you can't run offense. You know, it brought me back to my Don Munson camp days of trying to entertain people outside because Mac Court was only one gym, and you know, you'd have, as you said, all these kids, but it didn't go well for them. I mean, the first day was super exciting until they found out what it was. And then it became counterproductive. Like, some of these guys are going to opt out, which we've had a couple opt outs. We've had some injuries. I mean, the other thing that I have and never experienced in 34 years is, you know, we've practiced the last 3 weeks until like 2 days ago with like seven guys, because normally I'd have, you know, former players come in and help, or managers, but we've only got one manager in a bubble. We have no former players are allowed. Nobody's allowed at our practices. So when you get down to seven guys, you're literally seven people out there trying to get better, and you can't go 5-on-5. So it's been a challenge for me professionally, but really for the players, just to mentally, you know, stay with the game and to try to improve and to try to understand, you know, how we're trying to play without really doing it. And there's no real film to watch because, you know, you don't even have a scrimmage. You know, we played seven games this year. Well, normally before we ever play a game, we have three scrimmage tapes. We have a black and gold game and two scrimmages against other teams. That's six films or six, quote unquote, you know, practice games before we ever hit the court. We had none of those this year.
Yeah, but you got to stop losing these back to backs, right? Your three luck conference losses.
Yeah.
That's a crazy thing, right? Where you play a game and you're like, hey, you like that? We got to go play them again. Yeah. What's the, like, challenge wise, that's got to be kind of interesting in terms of something new, playing the same team back to back nights.
Yeah. We had last week's canceled, so we didn't have to split, but we split with Bakersfield. We won the first night in overtime, and then lost the second day. And then we did the same thing at Fullerton. We won the first night by a couple and then lost in overtime with them. And it just, you know, you try to tell them, hey, it's for us to get to the NCAA tournament, we got to go back to back to back. We got to win 3 days. But mentally and physically, they're not in shape for back to back. You know, it's no excuse because neither is the other team. But some of these teams have had more, you know, are in better shape and everything. We just haven't. And that's the other thing. How are you going to have a physical rebounding practice with seven guys? Cause you know, when you do that, you're going to lose at least one or two. So now you're willing to go to five. Now, when you're at 13, you know, okay, we're going to get after today. We might get down a guy or two, but we're going to be okay. So it's been a fine line. But like everything else, you know, like going through what I did at Minnesota, I just feel like, you know, the positive side of it is, you know, this is a life experience, and this is a once in a lifetime thing that hopefully we'll never have to experience again. I don't want to go through it again, but I'm going to make the best of it. And you know, you can, you know, your character's being challenged, your frame of mind and everything. And we have to make the best of it. And how lucky are we through this pandemic that our school's investing all these three tests a week, all this money for us. They're not making anything on a gate or TV or anything else that for our guys to have this experience through the pandemic to try to have a basketball season. And we just have to look at the positive of it.
Okay. Last thing. I heard Eli Manning say this once. He had one like terrible season with it, led the league in interceptions. And he was doing an interview, and I was living in New York at the time, and it was with the local station. And he's like, I'm a better quarterback now than I was when we won a Super Bowl. Just, you know, I have all these interceptions, right? And to me, it was the something, you know, in athletics, like you're a better coach now than you were when you were at Gonzaga. You're not a worse coach.
100%.
Right. So, but trying to convince somebody that, well, then how come you don't win as many games? Like, there's a lot of other things that have to magically come together. Okay, so if I were to ask you in your heart of hearts, what do you do way better now than you ever did early in your career?
Understand my players, understand what they're going to put myself in their shoes, you know.
How do you do that?
Well, I think you got to spend time with them, and you have to listen to them. You know, when I was at Gonzaga, I still had more of my dad and Fitz and that in me where, okay, there's just one way to do it. And they've got to do it this way. You know, if you're going to be successful, you got to get them all on the same page, and it's got to be your page. Now if I could survive, you know, and go back to that and do that with my players now, we would probably win more games, but it's not the right way to do it, you know? And, you see a few people like Bill Belichick still doing it that way. And people like that, Nick Saban, but I think
some of it is the outward image that I've heard that Belichick, when you get to know him, is awesome. Mm-hmm. And I think Saban kind of much the same way. It's never all or one, right? The players cannot. You have to be a leader, but there is a different way in which you have to. I have a thought for you. I think they so badly want to be heard and recognized, and that's why they're so into social media. That's the real thing about it. Is it's just them saying, "I want somebody to pay attention to me, and to make me feel loved and wanted." And if you can do that, and say, hey, look, a disciplined lifestyle, a disciplined basketball player is a better one, you will receive even more of this adulation. That's, I think, when you find the magical mix.
Right. And that's that balance that you're trying. And I think I'm a lot better at it now than I was then. But as I said, back then, you know, I was naive to it. And I had a lot of confidence in what I was doing and felt like I knew what I was doing, you know, at a young age. And I think that boded well for me.
Listen, you've been more than gracious with way too much of your time. You haven't moved from one spot. You haven't had a sip of water. You haven't had to go pee. You've had some family walking around in the background. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate it and how much I've always admired how you've handled adversity. Anybody can handle success, right? We can handle success, right? I mean, but handling adversity, and you've always done it with a smile, and you've always been somebody that everybody likes and wants to be around. And I want to do that Zoom though with you and Billy, and maybe we'll have a few pop on, or maybe we won't. But I want some of those Fitz. I want some of those old school Fitz stories and old Mark Hughes stories.
They're good. There's no cell phones back then, which is good. But I'm all for it. Jeff Goodman was all trying to get Mark to do that, but I'm not sure he ever got him up. With enough confidence or beer or whatever to get him to do it. So you can take a swing at him.
As you know, I'm old school Long Beach State, right? So my dad, so I'll tell one quick Tex winter story. So we moved out, and Tex, it's kind of similar to your story. Tex was gone. I don't know if he had another house in Palm Springs or something. So we stayed at his house for the first month we lived in California. And we're in Long Beach, and it was a little cute little house. And he gave my dad a 1976 Honda Civic hatchback. And this is back in the days when you had 18 scholarships. And my dad would just be gone. He'd go recruit, like get in the car and he'd go to New York. And he was just gone recruiting, whatever. But Tex let us stay at his house. We actually, a lifeguard found a dog at the beach. So we adopted, we had three dogs. One was a puppy. And we for the first month. But here's Tex Winter was he is amazing because the triangle is more than just an offense. It's like a lifestyle. Every stretching exercise, every cutting drill, everything is 15 to 18 foot perfect spacing, and it gets pounded into your head. But he didn't give a shit about defense. He would actually, when they go to defensive drills, he would leave and go home or go back to the office because they'd practice at the arena, at the Long Beach Arena downtown. And so I never forget, like, I would say, like, Dad, you guys are so bad defensively. God, Craig Hodges plays no defense. He's like, well, you know, when your head coach leaves the gym when you're doing defensive drills, that's kind of hard. But he was
how old were you then?
I was 6 until 9. He got fired when I was 9. So, but I used to come to practice and run around and games. And the only game they would fill up, they would play UNLV and Fresno State. Those two teams traveled. Boyd Grant and the Red Wave, they would travel really well. And the league was unbelievable then, right? You had Leon Wood at Fullerton. You had Brian Shaw at Santa Barbara. Like, everybody had a pro. And then UNLV had just more pros. They had Sidney Green, all those guys. So, Freddie Banks, I remember. I think he got fired before. No, I think I saw Freddie Banks and those guys as well. Mark Wade was, like, my favorite point guard as a kid. My dad offered him. He was a San Pedro kid. He went to UNLV. Anyway, listen, I got to run. You got to run.
Yeah.
I wish you nothing but health. Let's get together in person sometime very, very soon. And
awesome.
Thanks so much.
Awesome. I enjoyed it too. It was good to reminisce and catch up and everything. I had a good talk with Greg the other day too. I mean, it's good to catch up. And
he told me, and he wanted me to tell you that he really appreciated it. You said some things that really resonate with him.
Well, I'm glad he's busy at least, because you know, coaches need to coach. So, and he's a coach. So.
Yep.
All right. Yep. Sounds good. Okay.
Thanks, Munz.
Yep.
Bye. I mean, I could keep talking to Dan Munson for hours and hours. He's a really interesting dude with a great life and a good perspective. He's also a very good basketball coach. But we did at some point have to end it. So I hope you enjoyed it. By the way, quick programming note, you want to listen to the Doug Gottlieb Show? It's 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific. You can also download the podcast. You can listen to it, stream it on foxsportsradio.com. You can listen to it on Sirius XM 217 or 203. And that's every day, Monday through Friday. Plus, tell a friend about this podcast. Download, subscribe, rate. If you write a review, I think I actually might get like a dollar more because of it. And that would be really cool. Thanks so much for listening. My thanks to Dan Munson for setting it up, or not setting up, but agreeing to do it. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and this is All Ball.